The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning, how are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement, and I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie, on the Radio Kerry app, or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. Speaking of the traditional wireless, I seen one during my travels this week, an amazing one, like built in the 1940s, early 1940s. So it was great to see that. Do any of you at home have one of those? You know what I'm talking about now? They're kind of a big operation with two big dials on them, and you can see how it switches between the channels. They're amazing sound out of them. And that's what I've been listening to, back in the day. They would have had batteries, I think. But maybe you still have one. I seen one that someone still uses it. And they listen to Radio Kerry on it, which is great here as well. Funny all weather at the moment, isn't it? It's kind of cold, and then it's hot, and I don't know. It's hard to put your finger on it. And we're coming up to the summer solstice, which I will be talking about later on, the longest day of the year. Now, very busy programme, as always, on the Saturday Supplement this morning. We'll hear about the first ever Festival of Wool and Cloth in Kerry, and experience a loom from the 1760s in operation. Now, a loom is what a weaver would use. You know that, you don't need me telling you. We'll remember the late Eamon Langford and his untiring work he did in his local community of South Kerry, and they are unveiling a plaque in his memory at the end of this month. And Eamon was a teacher as well, secondary school teacher in Scullyconnell. So a lot of his former students would remember him fondly as well. The Marine Institute's Explorers Education Programme and Tralee Education Support Centre have announced their popular face-to-face continuing professional development teachers summer training course, Exploring the Seashore Using Cross-Curricular Learning and Skills. And it will be taking place in Kerry this summer, so we'll be finding out all about that. And it's very interesting. If you are a teacher, you'll want to listen to that. The Oral History Network of Ireland is hosting a series of regional events on the theme Listening to the Voices of Local History and Community Heritage. And I will be talking to them about how Kerry people can get involved. So I wasn't joking, was I, when I said we've a lot to talk to? We'll also have some live from the past where I go back to a particular time in history, and we'll be talking about how moss helped out in World War One to help soldiers heal their wounds, and it was Kerry moss that was used, would you believe? We'll be going to Kinmare there, back to World War One, 1916, and if that wasn't far enough going back, we're going to go back to 1661, and we're going to meet up with two brothers, poteen makers in Kerry. So you're going to want to stay tuned for that as well. Now, I mentioned that the first ever Festival of Wool and Cloth is taking place in Kerry, in Waterville specifically, at Tech Armagan, from the 4th to the 7th of July. It's going to be full of amazing different workshops and demonstrations and everything else. And I met with one of its organisers, Leela Fenton, and I also met with Kirsten in Port Magee, who has her own loom, and it dates back to the 1760s, and she had two looms there. One was a big, huge one, 3 metres wide, and she invited me into her workshop, and I actually got to see it in operation. But I first spoke with Leela Fenton about this new festival. Leela, it's an absolute pleasure to come out here and into an actual wonderful workshop, which we will be talking about a little later on, and talking to Kirsten, hopefully. Tell us about the Festival of Wool and Cloth. I think the idea is brilliant, but where did the idea come from?
Well, myself and my co-conspirator Maureen Sheehan, we used to do a class at the Tech called Fiddling with Fabric, and it was at Tech Amagon, and we just got really friendly. It was a very nice bunch of women, and we carried on seeing each other, and we would just get together and sew or knit or do crochet. And then one day we were thinking, why is there never anything about fabric stuff? Why, you know, it's like the poor relation of crafts. And we thought, well, what about if we have a festival?
Amazing. And you're having it in Waterville. Tell us about the location you're having it, because this is a place that has always kind of fostered the arts and creativity in South Kerry.
Well, Waterville is an amazing place, and so is South Kerry. And you have got more creative people here than you could shake a stick at, because there are so many people like weavers and spinners and knitters doing all kinds of things. And they're all in their little workshops, atomised, not knowing each other. So that's one of the points of the festival, is that not only can you take a load of workshops, but you can also have a coffee and chat to other people and ask them what they're doing. You might collaborate with them a bit. So it's a bit sort of joining up the dots, really.
And so tell us about the actual event itself, then, the festival. What, give us a sample of what exactly is going to be going on.
Right, well, we open with Cathy Kerwin, and she is going to be talking about the history of flax in Ireland. So that's an interactive talk, and there'll be bits of flax to handle and bits in the process. And as you know, flax has had a very long and distinguished history in Ireland, which actually is having something of a revival. So that's great. And then the next day we'll have all sorts of workshops like eco printing, so that's printing with leaves and with vinegar and rust water. I mean, that workshop got sold out straight away because there's so much interest in that. We've got workshops on wet felting, on needle felting, which is like a dry process, and we've got somebody called Breda McNellis coming from County Louth, and she does the most beautiful landscapes of the world, Atlantic Way, you know, just gorgeous colours, delicious. And then we also have our own Sharon Wells. She's from Kells, and she's a very distinguished both dyer, needle felter, everything fibre arts, as we like to call it. So she's, you know, she's coming and she's doing a couple of workshops as well. We've got slow stitching, which is like mindful meditative hand stitching. We've got Sean O'Leary doing a fantastic story,
the goat man,
and his workshop's called Yarns About Yarns, and he's doing it Asgolga as well as in English, so that would be great. We've got knitting Asgolga as well. It's a drop-in session, so we've got two fantastic Irish speaking knitters, so you can come. And you know, it's interesting, I was talking to a lady and she's saying, well, my Irish is quite good, but I don't know the words for casting on or casting off. So you can learn some craft Irish as well if you'd like to.
There's a few different angles in this. Like, I think it's preserving our heritage, our culture, which is so important, because you're just after reminding me, my grandmother used to knit a lot, and I'd be inside with her on Valencia Island, and she would knit us all jumpers or caps that we'd go out farming with. And even just recently I had a nephew, Dylan, born, and my mother knitted him a hat, and it just reminded me of what our grandmother used to do as well, you know. So it hands on that, but also I suppose it fosters this kind of network opportunity for people to talk to each other, but also to showcase the wonderful talent. Like you said, I was spellbound when we did Handmade in Kerry about the talented people we have here.
Oh yeah, and people who are still doing it. I mean, we've got a workshop which is for intermediate knitters, so not beginners, and that's doing the stitches that you do in Aran's sweaters, of which, you know, there are loads of different patterns. And so because we wanted to have a little bit of a showcase of them, we had this sort of call out, and Bridie, who's in Carsevine in her 90s, knitted all these gorgeous squares for us. Look at these.
They're here in front of us here.
Like that one's called the Tree of Life, that pattern. Isn't that gorgeous?
Yeah, I didn't realise when they were on top of each other, but they're all different patterns.
Yeah, they're all different patterns, so you can learn. So Maria, who is an expert knitter, is going to be showing people how to do cabling. And then we've got some other super knitters on hand. So
super knitters.
They're super knitters, you know. They're super knitters. They can read any pattern. They can do anything.
Knit a cape and everything.
And they can help you as well if you need it. So there's all sorts of, this is kind of slightly scary knitting, because my knitting, I have to say, is not as good as this. But if you know how to knit already and you want to take it to the next level, this is a great place. And as you know, Iveragh had its own patterns and things like this. So there's a lot of history.
Also, there was a
distinctive pattern from this region.
Yeah, different regions, my understanding is, tended to have different kinds of patterns that people liked to use, and different families liked different patterns as well. So you could identify people by their sweaters and things. So, yeah, it's really interesting how much history there is to the great sort of Aran sweater, you know. Yeah,
and you have a lot more beautiful craftsmanship here in front of us. So tell us about that, and who's going to be showcasing this, or,
well,
you know.
This is another little shout out we had for some volunteers. So these are little hearts, which you can see are embroidered, and they've got a tiny little sort of wire on the top, and they're all individual, and it's something you can do in the slow stitching workshop. But actually, sometimes we leave them in the town park, because if anyone's needing a hug or a bit of TLC, they can just take it home.
Yeah, because there's beautiful hearts stitched on, all different designs, which I think is amazing.
There is. And actually, that's part also of a session we're doing on craftivism, which is a mixture of two words, craft and activism.
Right.
And so we're screening a documentary about craftivism, and then afterwards we are going to be making some reusable sanitary pads for women in crisis zones. And then it goes to the Pachamama Project, and then they send them out. So it's a charity.
And where do they send them out to?
Well, Afghanistan, Gaza, all sorts of places where there isn't a sort of regular system for women to have hygiene, you know. And they reckon that giving 8 pads will last one woman 5 years.
Whoa.
So that's really good. So, you know, you can see we're sort of cutting out. They tell you the specification, and you cut them out, and then you sew them.
Yeah.
So these will go into the sewing
machine.
Soon. Yeah, so that's we're productive. Productive is, here's some lovely, look, this is beautiful bonine, which we got from Kerry Woolen Mills, and I think they're one of the last mills to make this gorgeous fabric. And here's some lovely Irish tweeds. The colours are delicious. Look at them. Those beautiful sagey greens.
Yeah. And you can I was feeling the bonine there. It's amazing. It's amazing
lovely.
Feeling, isn't it?
Yeah. It's so elegant as well. It's kind of earthy and woolly, and so it's got a bit of a texture. But I mean, can you imagine making a suit out of this?
Yeah.
How fabulous.
Yeah.
So you can be very sort of chic with this stuff, although it's actually country stuff as well, you know.
It's so sustainable, all of this as well, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you mention that, because one of the people we're having at the festival is the Wise Wool Project, and they started out of Beaufort, and these two amazing women are doing it, and they're highlighting wool waste in Ireland, because a lot of the sheep farmers, as you know, around here, they have to discard their wool, because it actually costs them money to shear a sheep, but then they can't get it to anyone. And wool has loads of uses. You could use it in the garden. You could use it as insulation. You could spin it. You could make slippers. You could make tons of things. So they're highlighting wool waste in Ireland and trying to get together producers with users. Mm. So that's really great. And they're both very imaginative and funky people. So it's great. They've got some brilliant ideas.
Yeah, that's so important. We did a series called Women in Agriculture, and we interviewed two sheep farmers, and that is the thing. Like, back in the day, you'd get a lot of money for your wool, but now you can't give it away. But they're trying to come up with creative things as well, about protecting young trees, putting it around it, and different things like that. So
use it in lots of places. And also, so we've got, for example, Sharon Wells coming, and all day Saturday she's doing an amazing show and tell where you can handle stuff and look at them, and she's got a great interest in Irish wool breeds, and there's a lot of interest in that now. What, rather than have sheep that we just breed for meat and don't know what to do with the wool, why don't we also have sheep that really work in the Irish landscape and climate, but really good wool? Because a lot of the wool that we use for sweaters is actually imported, and that's rather shameful. We should be having it here, growing it here, harvesting it here, and using it here. So, you know, there's quite an environmental aspect to the festival without sort of pushing it down your throat, if you know what I mean. It's kind of quietly there in the background.
It's absolutely a wonderful idea. I have to praise you on it. And again, I think our arts people need an outlet as well to showcase you know, what they do. But also, it's the skills that are being passed on as well as so important. Yeah. And that's where your workshops and you're really highlighting that as part of the festival.
Yeah, well, I mean, just take weaving alone. I mean, what are the chances that in South Kerry you'd have all these world-class weavers? Because we have. I mean, there's one lady who's coming and she has woven Bach's Goldberg Variations, the music score, on her loom. It's like the eighth wonder of the world, you know, and she lives in Gernafulla. And then, you know, we've got Kirsten, who's got her beautiful loom that she's bringing from the 1760s. And you'll be able to see it and to touch it and ask her questions. And there are all these people who are dying to get into weaving. So now they'll know they have a mentor, another person they can ask, a big network. And weavers tend to, you know, they don't throw their looms away. They always make sure it goes to the right person. You know, these things are handed down, the skills, the equipment, lovingly handed down. So that's really good.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's like an old harp or something, and that the melody plays on and that it's handed over in the same way. Yeah. If people want more information, where do they go and when is it on again? Remind people.
Well, it starts on the 4th of July and it ends. So that's the Thursday evening, and then Friday and Saturday are workshops. So that's 5th and 6th of July. And on the 7th of July, we have a big fair going on. And you can go to Eventbrite, the Tech Amagon page. You can look on Facebook, Festival of Wool and Cloth. All the details are there. Or you can ring Tech Amagon directly.
Excellent. Well, I wish you the best of luck with it. But we are going to get, I suppose, a demonstration or to see that wonderful loom you were talking about, because we'll be talking to Kirsten next. But thanks a million for now.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Leela Fenton there speaking about the Festival of Wool and Cloth. We're going to take a break. Now after that, we're going to meet Kirsten, who has a loom from the 1760s.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, I hope you're enjoying the Saturday Supplement. We're talking about the Festival of Wool and Cloth, which is taking place in Waterville from the 4th to 7th of July in Tech Amagon. And at that festival, there's going to be a loom going to be demonstrated at it. And Kirsten owns that. And Kirsten lives in Port Magee. And that's where I met Leela and Kirsten. And I asked Kirsten, would she give me a bit of a demonstration? So before we hear from Kirsten, we're actually going to hear her working on the loom weaving. So have a listen to this.
My name is Fern Carstensen and I live in Port Magee.
Kirsten, thanks a million for welcoming us into this wonderful workshop. And it's like stepping back in time, because we have these two looms, I presume they're called, is it? Yeah. We have a smaller one and a bigger one. And if we go to the smaller one first, tell us about it.
It's an historical loom. It's an 1 meter, 10 centimeter wide. And it's an old linen loom from a museum. And the museum closed, and I had the chance to get these looms. And the wonderful thing is, the owner of the museum showed me how to weave in the historical way. And so it's a fantastic to use these looms.
And were you always into weaving?
I weave for a hobby for a long time, but only on small table looms. And first, when I see these big looms, the other loom here is 3 meters wide.
3 meters wide.
Yeah, it's from a German textile artist. It's about 100 years old, and I thought, oh, it's too big. I can never handle it. But it's fantastic to work with these looms, and that these old historic looms still work. And it's fantastic to hear the sounds and to see the weaving, and it's a lot of fun.
It must be, I don't know, a strange, wonderful feeling to be working on something that someone was working on so many centuries ago. That's mind-boggling.
Yeah, when you work with the loom, you see it. It feels old, and you feel the sweat from hundreds of people sometimes, and it's an amazing feeling to work. And you see, the most parts are original.
Yeah.
So it was still in use over the centuries, and it's wonderful. Yeah.
And how does a loom work for someone that wouldn't know?
Oh, it's the main principle is you have your wraps,
yes,
the threads who go from the back to the front, and then you open a shed. So one threads are going up and one going down, and you put another thread through, and so you build up the fabric. And you can do it with yarn. I mostly do it with wool from here, from my neighbors, with only carded wool. And you can make an fabric for clothes. But you can also, you see, I make a lot of rugs or cushions or tapestry. And you have amazing opportunities.
And you're using wool from around the area.
Yeah, it's you see on the back. There's all the wool from my neighbors, because they had the problem. The Irish wool have no market at the moment, mm-hmm, and they had to throw it away, or it's waste here. And it's the same in the most northern countries. And I came from Germany, and that's the same problem there. The sheep are only breed for the meat, but not for the wool, and they get nothing for the wool. And so I collect the wool and dye it with natural colors here, and card it and prepare, and then I make all these things you can see here.
How long does it take to make an item? Like, say, the rug, for instance, that looks fairly big to me now. So how long would it take you to make that?
Oh, it's depends on the technique. When it's an only rug you use in these old farm buildings in front of the chimney or so, it's when I prepare everything, I think 3, 4, 5 hours. When I make this tapestry with single knots, takes a bit more time.
Or the tapestries, is it? Or and there's something else I was thinking about when you'd be working on this. Is it kind of therapeutic? I'd imagine you're sitting down and it's kind of a rhythm.
When I don't make these pictures, I only make a normal rug. It's like meditation, because it's going from left to right and from right to left, and it's a very meditating.
Meditative. And I was saying, this is small, and it's not very small. It's huge.
My middle one. I have another one. It's only 70 centimeters. So these are big floor looms. Then the normal people haven't the space. These are all floor looms. Mostly the people were working on table looms, and that's very handy. You have great table looms, and they are not very expensive. So when you're interested in weaving, you can start with a small loom, not in school loom, but a small loom, and you can make fantastic things. I think on the festival you see a lot of weavers working with different kind of looms, and what they can make with these looms, it's amazing.
Do we know what this loom, where it worked or what it did? Like, was it for
It's from the middle part of Germany, from the Sauerland, and it was a traditional farming loom for making linen from flax. It's called a linen loom,
okay,
a linen floor loom.
Yeah. There was flax, and Leila mentioned the history of flax in Ireland. There was they used to grow flax on Valentia Island, and Ida Kerry did as well for linen as well. Yeah, so it's amazing. Let's go over to the larger one, which is quite large. You said 3 meters wide.
Yeah, it's
and,
3 meters
wide. To me now it looks very complicated. There's cogs and there's springs and there's everything in it. Is it the same principle? But how does this one work?
Yeah, this is the same principle. It's the small loom.
Okay.
It's a horizontal loom, so you can sit and you see it like a table. Here, this is a vertical loom, so you weave from down to up. And but the technique is the same. You have the pedals. You can make a shed where you can put your yarn through and But you can make, when you want, I have a very long raft, you can make tapers 3 meter wide and 14, 20 meters long when you want.
Whoa.
Yeah. So
you have individual kind of projects working along and
yeah, one, yeah. Yeah. I first thought about to make a very, and my seagrass. So I only go outside, see something, and then I transfer it to the loom.
Yeah. There's a very tactile nature to it as well. It's almost like you'd love to rub it and feel it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because the wool is such a fantastic material, and it feels so nice, and so I work sometimes with yarn, with carded wool, and it's a very haptic thing to weave, but also to sit on it or to stand on it.
I was feeling it earlier when I was interviewing Leela. It was very comfy, I have to say. Yourself then, tell us your story. How did you come to Port Magee?
I grew up on the coast, on the northern coast of Germany, and then I how the life plays, I go around a lot, and for me it was important to go back to the shore. And I'm originally from Canada, but Canada is a quite long way because all of my family is in Germany. And so we decided to go to Ireland because we loved the landscape here. We loved the people here. The people are so great and nice. And so 4 years ago, we have a look here in South Kerry and fell in love with this farm. And yeah, that's...
And the rest is history.
Yeah.
And what do you hope for the future? Like you still do weaving in Germany as well? And are you hoping to move the business here, or what are you hoping?
Yeah, I have one foot in Germany, but I think in the autumn or end of the year, I relocate totally here, and we plan to make a business here with all the looms and weaving and wool and fiber craft. Yeah. So excellent. Hopefully end of the year. Yeah.
Brilliant. A question I meant to ask you. What makes a good weaver?
Patient.
I was going to ask that, is it? Yeah.
A bit of patient. Yeah. Yeah. So in the beginning I wasn't a good weaver because I have not a lot of patience. But to let your creativity flow, to see what happened. And yeah.
Mm. And at the moment you're doing commissions, are you, for people that would want to?
I do some cushions and some tapestry work, but two of the pieces are only for me to experience, make try to different techniques, and so I always learn every day, and we'll see.
And if people wanted to contact you, where do they go?
The easiest thing is on Facebook, I think. It's Kirsten Fern, it's connected to the festival, or you can see me at the festival in Waterville.
And speaking of the Festival of Woolen Cloth on the 4th to the 7th of July, you must be looking forward to it, are you?
Yeah, I'm very excited. When Leela asked me if I can show the weaving, and I'm very excited to show on the historical loom. I bring my smaller loom with me, and I'm looking forward to meet the other people here in South Kerry. Like Leela said, there are so many people here, and I don't know the other ones, and I think there's a lot of things you can do together for dyeing and weaving and spinning and everything.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity. Yeah. I think, though, that this is going to steal the show, historical loom. It's going to be really the centerpiece. It's absolutely amazing. Thanks a million for talking to me, and your kind offer to show me around as well. I've really enjoyed it, and best of luck with everything going forward, and enjoy the festival.
Yeah, thank you, Joe.
Yeah, it's a beautiful structure, the loom, and it's up there on our Facebook page if you want to have a look at it, and you can see Kirsten in operation there, but it will be demonstrated at that festival as well, so we wish him all the best of luck with that. We're going to take a break. We'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
The Oral History Network of Ireland is going to be hosting a series of regional events on the theme, Listening to the Voices of Local History and Community Heritage, and there's one taking place in Limerick next week. And to tell us more all about this, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Daisy Roberts, Strategic Development Officer with Oral History Network of Ireland. Daisy, you're very welcome. How are you this morning?
Very good, thanks. Great to be here.
Yes, and tell us about the Oral History Network of Ireland, first of all, before we talk about this, these events you've organised.
So the network is an umbrella organisation for oral historians and projects across Ireland, and we support individuals, local history groups and academics to record and store oral history interviews. We run an annual conference which is taking place next week in Derry, as well as various training courses, networking opportunities and events like this one coming up in Limerick next week.
Very good. So tell us about the event in Limerick. What are you hoping to achieve with it?
Well, we really want anyone with an interest in local community or family histories to come along, because we want to know how we can better support people to access oral histories and maybe record interviews for themselves. So it'll be an opportunity for people to hear snippets from local history, oral history collections, to feedback to us about our offer, and also to network with other history and heritage enthusiasts.
Mm. And do you teach people how to actually record?
So we do. We have a whole training program that takes place online. People can access that via our website, and we also run in-person events for training. But this event will really be to kind of hear from people interested in oral history and people interested in local history that maybe aren't collecting oral histories themselves yet, to hear what we can do to kind of encourage more of those people to be involved in accessing oral histories, using them in their research, or conducting in the interviews themselves.
Mm. How important is capturing our oral history?
I mean, I don't think it can be emphasised enough. I think it's so important because it values everyone's experiences, and it's a really great way for communities and organisations to record their own histories and to speak for themselves, which you don't get very often in the historical record. I also think it's really powerful because anyone can do it, and that's really what the network is here for, to give the training and the guidance that could mean anyone with an interest in recording a family member or a member of their community or a local club to record those interviews. So, very important.
Yeah. We teach, classes on recording and things like that in Kerry College, myself and my colleague Connie Broderick, and we've done oral history projects like this. And we write up on the board at the start, and my listeners now are probably well sick of me saying this, but when an old person dies, a library burns. So all that is gone. So I suppose the importance of capturing that before it is gone, because it's not like we have to go back 80 or 90 years either. Like, people have the history around now, but it is, I suppose, every day it's passing on.
Yeah, exactly. And Ireland has such a rich history of oral culture and storytelling. So it's so important to document that for future generations. And yeah, interviewing, hearing people tell those stories in their own words and in their own voice is such a great way to do that.
Mm. We did a project about the fair days in South Kerry, about the market days, and it captured the social scene and I suppose the agricultural scene and the history and how everything changed. But it was the voices themselves. Now, we knew about the history of that time, you know, maybe what Eamon de Valera brought in line of exports and all that, but it was more to hear the people themselves. It's a different kind of history, you know, it's more the history you mightn't find in books.
No, and it's history of people's families and of their thoughts and their feelings, and that comes through in their voices. You hear the emotions, they connect to those emotions again when they're telling those stories, and you just don't get that in other kinds of history.
Mm. What kind of projects have come across, at the network, or any projects that kind of have stood out to you so far?
So there's so many great oral history projects going on around the country and in the Southwest. So the Kerry Writers Museum's collecting interviews with people from the world of amateur drama and theatre, which I'd imagine are very, very well told. And the Bear Island History Project's collecting history of the island and people's families. So there's really so much going on, and there's so much in the Southwest. So we really want to reach those people and make sure they can get involved and tell us what they need from us.
You have a load of great historians in Kerry, local historians, but then I suppose it doesn't necessarily have to be the historian inverted commas either. It can be just anyone that has an interest in history or capturing that history, like you said, from their own family.
Yeah, absolutely. We really want anyone that's interested, no matter what their level of experience, whether they've recorded oral histories before, whether they've even just listened to them, whatever their level of interest or experience, we really, really want to reach those people and encourage them to come along.
Do you have to be technically minded?
No, not at all. I think that can be quite intimidating, but there's lots of different recording equipment that you can use, and some of it is very straightforward. So, yeah, it's not a technically minded thing at all.
And if people come along and they do, you know, are interested in all that, and then they do a project, is there somewhere where that project can be, you know, I suppose, platformed or shown or heard?
So there's the Digital Repository of Ireland, which is a great platform for storing oral history collections, and also local libraries and archives can take on collections from people documenting histories for themselves. So there's lots of different options, but yeah, they can vary depending on where about you are.
Excellent. And if people want to go along to your event, when, where is it on, and how can people get more information?
So it's at the Absolute Hotel next Wednesday, the 19th of June, from 2 to 4pm. People are welcome to just show up on the day, but there's also more information on our website.
You're listening to the Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Now, let's have an episode of Live from the Past where I go back to a particular time in history and I bring you a live report from that time. Now, we're going to go back to 1916 to Kenmare, where they are using moss to help out in World War One to help with soldiers' wounds.
This documentary was produced by Connie Broderick and Joe McGill. It was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.
Joe McGill reports live from the past.
As you join me here today, I'm in Kenmare Town to visit the Regional Depot Centre for the collection of sphagnum moss. Kenmare is one of many rural areas in Ireland which has seen a regional depot centre established for the collection of the moss, which is in huge demand for the Irish Boer Hospital Supply Depot in Dublin. Used in ancient times, Gaelic Irish sources wrote that warriors in the Battle of Clontarf used moss to pack their wounds. In this war, with the prevalence of sepsis, doctors are desperate to get their hands on something sterile that will keep the wounds clear of infection, so they have turned to sphagnum moss. The dried moss has antiseptic and absorbent qualities, which can be used to dress a wound. It also can be used for surgical dressings because of the shortage of cotton wool. To tell us more about the volunteers and the work at the centre here is Wendy O'Donoghue. Wendy, thank you for joining me. Firstly, can you tell me about the volunteers at work here?
All the workers here and across the country are volunteers. These are local women who have given up their time to try and help in any way they can. You must realise that many of these women have husbands, fathers and brothers who are members of the Irish Regiment of the British Army. So anything we can do to help, we will.
Many of these women you speak of have taken to the boglands in droves in search of sphagnum moss, which is plentiful in Ireland. Is that right?
Yes. The bogs here in Ireland contain an abundance of moss known as sphagnum, which has antiseptic and absorbent qualities. After we gather it, the moss is brought to regional depots, like the one here in Kenmare. There is also one just over the road in Kilgarvan, you know.
And what is done with the moss once it arrives here at the depot centre?
Well, the depot centre set up around Ireland separate, wash and package the moss. Our job is to manufacture and supply dressings, bandages and other surgical appliances for hospitals treating wounded soldiers around the world.
Are there more depots like this around the country?
There are 81 depots across the country, with the Irish War Hospital Supply, the chief depot which manages the collection of moss from bogs all over the country.
Wendy, thank you for taking the time to speak with me.
Earlier, I travelled to the boglands not far from here to talk to the women volunteers who are picking this moss. While there, I met Fionnuala O'Connor, who's been volunteering for the past few months. Fionnuala, thank you for taking the time to talk to me. You're one of the many women here today, and indeed every day, gathering moss.
Yes, Joe. As you can see, there are women of all ages here gathering moss, so it can be used in dressings and bandages for wounded soldiers in the war.
I believe that it is plentiful in the boglands. Is it easy to access, Fionnuala?
It's not an easy task, Joe. You have to climb over wet, boggy ground, often in bad weather, to get to the moss. It's tough work.
And you take it from here to the depot centre in Kenmare, then?
Yes, we take as much as we can to the depot centre in Kenmare, where it can be put to good use. Some of it sewn into cloth dressings, which are sent to hospitals for the war wounded.
Well, Fionnuala, all I can say is thank you, and thank your fellow volunteers for the work you're doing here. Well, there you have it. Kerry Moss has been used to save lives in the Great War. This is Joe McGill reporting live from the past, from Kenmare, February 1916.
Yeah, that's live from the past, and we will have another episode in the next hour. Also in the next hour, we'll remember the late, great Eamon Langford for his untiring work that he did in the local community of South Kerry. And we'll also be talking about the Marine Institute's Explorers Education Programme and Tralee Education Support Centre have announced their popular face-to-face continuing professional development teachers summer training course, Exploring the Seashore, using cross-curricular learning and skills. It's particularly focused for teachers, so you're not going to want to miss that if you are a teacher or you know someone that is a teacher. And we'll have lots more besides. So keep it here. We'll take a break for the news at 10, and I'll join you again in the next hour.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now we're into the second hour of the Saturday Supplement, and I hope you're enjoying the programme. We'll be going live from the past again, and we'll be meeting two brothers, potsheen makers from 1661. So you're going to want to stay tuned for that. Now, I mentioned in the first hour we're going to be remembering the late, great Eamon Langford. Now, there is a plaque that's going to be unveiled in his honour on Friday the 28th of June at 2:30 p.m. at the Carsevine Library, and it's the board members of the Ivra Information Technology Training Co Limited that are inviting you to the unveiling of the plaque of the late Eamon Langford. And there will be light refreshments will be served, and there'll be special guests and speakers on the afternoon as well. Now, during the week, I went along to Ballinskellig's and I met with Maura Lyne, and I also met with Suzanne King, who are both board members of the Ivra Information Technology Training Co Limited. And Suzanne King is formerly of FEXCO, and she will tell you about that relationship as well with Eamon Langford. But first, I spoke to Mary Lyne about Eamon himself.
Well, Eamon was a very charismatic figure. He was a man who beamed light and splendour, as is quoted in a poem written by Micheál Ó Shocrú called Visionary. So we selected that as part of the inscription on the piece of brass that will be erected in the library to honour Eamon 6 years after his death in June 2018.
He did a lot of community work, and he was, you know, really involved in the community. And tell us about some of the work he was involved in.
Eamon was an educationalist. He came to Carsevine as a teacher in Scully Connell and became director of adult education when the three post-primary schools in South Kerry amalgamated and when Coláistanish Geilge was established in 1999. Eamon was active in the community by that stage, having been part of the group, the South SWKDO, and he had gone to Brussels to meet John Hume and Tom O'Donnell and various people in order to make the case for investment in South Kerry, because he felt it was needed. He became the director of the Adult Education Centre in Carsevine and was instrumental in bringing in funding to enable a PLC course, the very first course and a programme for adult learners when they finished the Leaving Cert. So people who had not done the Leaving Cert but wanted to return to education were encouraged to do so through Eamon's interest and through his promotion of that. He was a dedicated teacher, but involved everybody, people with disabilities, people who couldn't, who had difficulty learning. They were all welcome at the O'Connell Centre.
What I remember about Eamon Langford is he always had a smile.
Well, very positive man, a smile, a diplomat, even though he didn't agree with everything that the powers that be said, he was able to work around everybody. He had such a great relationship with people that he encouraged their involvement in his vision and in his work to promote South Kerry. So it was very successful in doing that, because he got community representatives from all the communities in South Kerry. For instance, Mary Grandfield came from Port Magee. Kathleen Lynch was a secretary of IITT when it started. And then myself, I came from Ballinskelligs. He had Suzanne King from Fexco. He involved business as well. And the women's group, Angela Hallisey, was involved in the women's group. She came on board. Sean Keating was the treasurer, and Sean is from the Kells community. He also had somebody from Valentia, PJ Sullivan, and later on Desi Cronin was involved as well.
What do you think his legacy is?
His legacy is what you see in the O'Connell Centre today. And I was at the refurbished building where the €1 million euro put in by Kerry Education Service, it was opened officially about 3 weeks ago. And nowadays he had a great number of courses were encouraged in that building. You had enterprise through the FOSS programmes. You had outdoor pursuits. Eamon felt that with the beauty of South Kerry, there should be skills training for people to climb mountains and get outdoors. So if Suzanne will explain where the money came from for all these programmes, because it came through FEXCO and South Kerry Development Partnership. They were crucial as well, because they had LEADER programme, which is European funding that had to be matched. Suzanne will talk about more about that. So you had outdoor pursuits, and we in that group, IITT, bought a bus to bus people from the centre out to the mountains where they could participate in sport and hiking and on sea and so on the sea and rivers that were canoeing and so on. So all of that was essential. And Eamon, pursued that, and we bought a bus. That programme subsequently went to Capitol Lee under Kerry Education Service. So Kerry Education Service has played a big part, as well as South Kerry Partnership and, of course, FEXCO. Just one other thing, Asane, the foreign language school for teaching English to students from Italy and Spain and France and so on. Those students were, Eamon wanted to set up a place for them, and they got a place in the summer in the O'Connell Centre to run their language school. They subsequently, with the help of Eamon, got their own base at the old Christian Brothers Primary School in Carsveen.
Wow. Suzanne, the FEXCO side of it then, tell us about your relationship with Eamon and I suppose the work he was doing there.
Yeah, okay. I suppose Mary has said a lot about Eamon and the character he was. He was a visionary. He was ahead of his time. I know we're talking about 26, 27 years ago. Really, technology was in its infancy. There was nothing at all happening. So Eamon, with his wonderful personality, I suppose, met another man who was also a visionary, Brian McCarthy, and he approached Brian with the view to getting funding to be matched by LEADER into the South Kerry, where people would be trained in computers. So Brian, of course, said yes. So FEXCO came on board over the five-year period with £50,000 at the time, and that was matched by LEADER. And Eamon was able to provide, then we were able to provide computers, basic computer training, and the PLC course started. So what happened then was FEXCO opened in Carsveen in 98, and we had a feeder, the Adult Education Centre was a feeder for the staff who weren't trained in computers up to that point. They were trained above in the centre, and they do their work experience with me in Carsevine and the Fexco building, and they eventually get employment. So from the point of view of South Kerry, it was huge to South Kerry. And then after the 5 years, Fexco came on board with €64,000 in the same understanding. So it just allowed technology to be improved. You know, the computers went out of date. We were able to get laptops and continue the training that was going on. So from the point of view of the employment in Carsevine, it provided a base for people to get employment in Carsevine. And Fexco personnel came down and did coaching with the pupils outside in the PLC. So it was wonderful to see. But Eamon just had the vision that it was going to work, you know, and he had the character and the ability to get the money, the private funding, to be matched. Yeah. You know. And I suppose I was a student of Eamon's, and I know from my own days as a student, he taught me Spanish, the interest he had in people, you know. It was just, there was nothing in it for Eamon. It was for South Kerry. Everything he did was with a view to improving South Kerry and providing the facility there for people to stay at home if that's what they wanted to do.
Yeah. He was a Spanish teacher, was he?
He was a Spanish teacher, and I went to St. John Bosco, and of course I'd like to do Spanish. So a couple of days a week I'd trot up to Eamon and I'd sit through his Spanish class.
Because he was above in the tech in Scully Connell.
He was above in the tech at the time, you call it, yes. So I used to head up to the tech, and Eamon was my teacher, and very interested. And you'd meet Eamon on the street, and he'd always talk Spanish. And of course, coming up to the exams, Eamon gave it 110%.
Yeah.
He made sure we got our honours.
Yeah. Because that's it as well. There's a lot of past pupils that will be remembering him as well, you know, he would have left his mark on them.
Very much so. Like, he was a very kind person. That's, you know, and it's a lovely compliment to be able to say about someone that they were kind. And I think his kindness was wonderful, and he was such a character. I mean, we had our board meetings. We had very regular board meetings, and Eamon was the chairman of the board at the time. And at the end of every board meeting, we'd have to go for a little toast, and we'd have our sing-song and everything. He was such fun, and he loved the joke, and there were great times. We had great times with Eamon.
Yeah, some lovely memories there. It's a very interesting era. The mutually beneficial relationship between Fexco and the centre and Eamon as well, which was brilliant to hear, the symbiosis of it all, our symbiotic relationship. Mary, the 28th of this month, of June, you're going to unveil something very special to remember Eamon. Tell us about that.
Well, we had started this, we had been thinking about this before COVID. So we had to suspend all thinking and work on this until after. So we resurrected it, I suppose, about a year and a half ago. So we are unveiling a plaque with an image of Eamon. And the plaque has been completed by Holger Lanza. And Holger didn't know Eamon, but we supplied photographs, and we think he did a beautiful image of Eamon, because it's showing Eamon smiling, and that was our image always of Eamon. He was always greeting people as he went up and down the street. He has a pen stuck as well in his top pocket. That's a touch to show that he was a man of the pen.
Yeah.
And then the inscription has been done in brass by David Howard. And the inscription says, I'll just quote the line, "All day he exuded joy. All day he beamed splendour, transmitting light, a light that glistens yet." And there's a translation in Irish also. That poem is one piece of a poem by Micheál Ócsorú, brother of Kathleen from Ballinskellig. Mm. So John O'Donoghue has been asked and agreed to unveil the plaque. John was a great supporter of Eamon's vision always. And Eamon was worked hand in glove with John as well for the benefit of the area. So we'd like to thank as well the library staff. Tommy O'Connor will be speaking. And Tommy is in charge of the library in Carsevine, and that's where it is going to be erected. So it's in a public space that people can go in and see and be inspired. And he's in good company, because he's joining Daniel O'Connell, Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty and other notables of Carrigsbeen. So we're glad to see him honoured in this way. All the committee, including John O'Connor, whom I didn't mention earlier, John Jeff, past principal of the school, the Coláiste na Scéalaithe, he's on our committee also.
And what time is that on? I presume everyone
that's
are welcome.
That's on at 2:30, all welcome, past pupils and people. And we've got lovely emails and letters back from some people who couldn't unfortunately come, like Joe Brennan and John McCrohan, who was one of the first. He put together with my husband Michal the first syllabus for the PLC, and they had to get funding through the Department of Education first, and John O'Dunn, who was very helpful in getting that course underway first, because Eamon felt that it was very important that there be a presence in the O'Connell Centre, and that that education continue there, and that it be, as he always said, a multiplex, a catering for everybody, a women's group, the Asana school, the people with disabilities, and ordinary folk like women who wanted to do their learner certificate for driving, you know, the certificate you have to study before you take your actual test. So all of those things had to be accommodated.
Just finally, I'd imagine the next day it's going to be full of emotion. Like, it's going to be, I suppose it will be feelings of happiness at remembering Eamon, but it'll be tinged with sadness as well.
Well, of course, his family, especially his close relations in Kells and beyond, they all miss Eamon, and we all miss him too, because he went out so fast and so rapidly that none of us got to say goodbye. But he died in the sea swimming. Well, he got a heart attack in the sea swimming. So he always loved nature. He enjoyed his swim. It was the month of June, the 30th of June, when he died. And yes, it will be tinged with sadness, but people have great memories of Eamon, and we are going to have some music from Ger O'Shea, that great musician from Carrigsbeen. He was a student of Eamon's, and he spoke so well about Eamon, about how he encouraged him in learning and staying in school, and he helped him all the way, as well as many, many others.
Yeah.
So we're glad to have that honour to Eamon. And of course, that's life. You leave your mark. Eamon left his mark in a huge way in South Kerry, and that's why the group, the board of directors, felt that it was very important to honour his contribution, because it wasn't just in one field. It was a multitude of fields that he worked in. The hospital, mental health, disabilities, fundraising for different causes. He was just that charismatic figure, as Suzanne said, and he encouraged a whole lot of workers to gather around him and to support his vision. And I think that was his strong point, that he had the charisma to bring workers together to execute what he had in his head.
Yeah, there's no doubt he's left his mark. Suzanne, finally, it is, I suppose, again, a privilege for yourself to be involved in something like this, to have had the relationship, the working relationship, but I suppose the personal friendship as well. And again, it's going to be a lovely occasion the next day.
Without a doubt. I mean, Eamon was a friend to everybody. He was a friend to everybody. And I think you can't talk about Eamon without smiling. So, and I think that's a lovely way to just remember him. You know, we'll talk about him, we'll smile, even though the day will be tinged with sadness, of course, and he's not there. But if he was there, he would be chuffed, without a doubt.
On that note, it's an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thanks for speaking to me this morning, and for remembering Eamon so well and so eloquently as well. It's very clear that it's not just his achievements, but it's also the friendships he's made and the relationships is so strong as well. But thanks for talking to me.
Thank you. Just to remind everybody again, it's on Friday the 28th of June at 2:30 in the library, Carrigsbeen. All welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, it'll be a poignant occasion, and I can imagine there'll be a lot of support out for Eamon for that unveiling in the Carrigsbeen Library on Friday the 28th of June at 2:30 p.m. And we wish them all the best of luck with that. We'll take a break. We'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now it's time for another Live from the Past, where I go back to
to a particular time in history and I bring you to that date. We're going to go back now to 1661, where we meet with two potsheen makers, and the making of potsheen has recently been outlawed.
This documentary was produced by Connie Broderick and Joe McGill. It was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.
Joe McGill reports live from the past.
As you join me here, I can tell you I'm in a bogland within the county. However, the exact location of this bogland I cannot disclose. Here in the wetland, I've arranged to meet two local men, brothers in fact, who produce the now illicit liquor, potsheen. The reason for secrecy, as our listeners will be aware, is some months ago the production of potsheen was outlawed. This was due to King Charles II looking to raise funds after the English Civil War. He's imposed a tax on alcohol here in Ireland, which has led to the spirit being widely produced in secret. As a result, I'm unable to disclose the names of the two brothers I'm about to speak to in order to protect their identity and stay anonymous. Men, thank you for joining me. What are your thoughts on King Charles II banning potsheen, resulting in its production being driven underground?
Well, I heard the king is trying to raise funds after the Civil War and all the stuff with Cromwell. But I think another reason is because of its potency and the difficulty of taxing it because it's homemade.
That's right. And with Cromwell dead, the king got control back after years in exile. 9, I think.
With him back in power, I think he's trying to put his own stamp on things. So he put a tax on alcohol and outlawed the making of potsheen.
I think it's also part of a wider effort to repress the Irish culture.
Just for our listeners at home who may not be aware of potsheen, can you explain it for us, please?
It's made from either potatoes or cereals, like grain, and sometimes barley. The other two main ingredients are yeast and sugar, and you cook them all in one pot. The term potsheen comes from the Gaelic word potta, meaning pot. This is basically the little copper pot stills which people use to make it at home.
My grandfather, God be good to him, used to make potsheen when I was a small boy at home, and I can still remember the smell when it was being made.
Neighbours used to call around and the potsheen would be called for. Then the stories would start. Remember, Joe, potsheen is famous for its strength. Sometimes nearly 90% pure.
Now that it's outlawed, the time of home brewing is lost forever.
Yes, an awful pity. Another Irish custom, by the way, aside. It has driven many a man to make it in secret away from prying eyes.
Do you fear being caught?
Well, we have to be careful and take measures so we're not caught. It's a shame it's come to this.
Without going into too much detail, can you tell me some of these?
Well, we only brew now in remote areas, and fires only burn on windy days to avoid attracting the authorities' attention from the lingering smoke. Would you believe bad weather is actually a blessing?
Well, we won't say any more. Thank you both for taking the time to talk to me. I must say, I admire your spirit, pardon the pun, and will to keep this custom alive in Ireland. Hopefully the ban on producing potsheen won't last too much longer and it can return to home sooner rather than later. This is Joe McGill reporting live from the past, from the boglands of Kerry, September 1661. Yeah, that was a report live from the past to 1661 and the potsheen makers. I hope you enjoyed that. We're going to take a break with more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, I mentioned in the first hour about this new teacher's summer training course exploring the seashore using cross-curricular learning and skills, which is taking place in Kerry, more specifically in Waterville this summer. And I caught up with Dr. Noreen Burke to find out all about this. Now, the Marine Institute Explorers Education Programme and Tralee Education Support Centre are delighted to announce the popular face-to-face continuing professional development teacher's summer training course Exploring the Seashore using cross-curricular learning and skills. It will be taking place in Waterville this summer from the 1st to the 5th of July and is now open for bookings. And to tell us more all about this, I'm glad to say we are joined by Dr. Noreen Burke, Director of Education, Galway Atlantic Aquaria, National Aquarium of Ireland, Salt Hill, Galway. Noreen, you're very welcome. And tell us, I suppose, firstly, what is the Institute Explorers Education Programme all about, first of all?
Morning, Joe. Lovely to talk to you. So the Explorers Education Programme is a marine-based education programme which is funded and supported by the Marine Institute. The programme started back in 2008 around the country. So we've been running a long time at this stage, over 15 years. And the teacher training courses are provided each July around the country to really, I suppose, support teachers that want a little bit of extra training on how to bring the ocean into their classroom using their local environment, using the seashore. And also it's a really great opportunity to actually just get out on the shore and into the fresh air and a bit of learning in the outdoor classroom.
Excellent. So then tell us about Exploring the Seashore, this unique, I suppose, training course that's going to be taking place this summer.
So the course has been running in Kerry for a number of years. We're really lucky that we work closely with Tralee Education Support Centre and the Explorers Outreach Centre in County Kerry, which is Sea Synergy. Staff from there, like this year it'll be Anna who will be running the course. She's run the course for a couple of years now in Kerry, so she'll be doing it again this July. The course focuses on, I suppose, it focuses on our marine environment, first of all, and then how you might bring the topic of marine into a classroom and why it's important. I suppose sometimes when we think of bringing the ocean into a classroom, we might think of just like science and the science of the ocean or biodiversity. But in fact, there's lots and lots of different ways that we can incorporate, you know, ocean content or materials or interests into the classroom and into our lives. So the course looks at English, Irish, maths, geography, history, arts, all the curriculum subjects. And it really, I suppose, works with teachers to figure out where their interest areas are and the subject they might like to use to bring the ocean into the classroom. Like, as an island nation, I suppose, we're just very conscious that the students in our classrooms, they need to be aware of their marine identity. You know, they need to understand that the island that they live on is part of this much bigger area. Like, the real map of Ireland includes our 880,000 square kilometres of land under the sea. So even if teachers and students just got that one fact, really, and celebrated that one thing out of the week, it would be fantastic, you know, just celebrating that marine links, you know, that we have, especially down in County Kerry, which is such a fantastic, has so many fantastic marine spaces.
Yeah, it's something I remember with my teachers in national school. They used to bring us out on nature walks and, you know, they'd be describing different flowers or plant life we'd come across, or maybe even birds, and they'd be pointing them out. And then we might have I remember we had the tadpoles in the class and different things like that. But they're things you never forget. I never forgot about what I learned and just the adventure of it.
That's it. It's really powerful. Like, those emotional connections are so powerful. And, you know, I grew up on a farm in Tipperary. I didn't grow up by the sea at all. And yet it was like a love of nature that was instilled in me by my family and by my father that brought me to work in this area and now work with marines. So we don't, you know, we talk to teachers and we talk to children in classrooms. Don't expect every child to go on to want to be a marine biologist or work with the ocean. But having a strong connection, an emotional connection to nature and to the marine and our, you know, our land-based spaces, they're really important if we're going to think about how we live sustainably in the future, and we live alongside nature, you know.
Mm-hmm. And protecting our sea life is so important for protecting our futures. So I suppose you're getting in early as well with this. It's hand-in-hand education and our marine education as well. It protects our future and safeguards our future, you'd hope.
You do. You really hope. I said, that's the thing. It's, if someone can have like a strong emotional connection, you're just more likely maybe to go that little extra mile to maybe make a sacrifice or make a change or think about how you're living sustainably. None of us are perfect, you know, and there's lots of barriers to making changes to behaviours. But having a strong emotional connection and a passion, I suppose, something can really help. Like, I think that's what's so powerful about the Explorers programme, is that it works with schools, it works with teachers, it works with children to kind of identify what they're passionate about and look at the marine in different ways. You know, we think about, we know about maybe large marine biodiversity like whales and dolphins and, you know, basking sharks, and they're amazing and they're so important. But for us, we want children to also make the connections to things like plankton and oxygen and the water cycle and the links between my carbon footprint and the ocean pH. And have not, they don't have to be, we're not expecting them all to be scientists here or, you know, have third level degree levels of knowledge, but having a basic scientific knowledge of some of those concepts, even like our weather and our climate and the links between the ocean and our weather and our climate. If you have a kind of a basic understanding of what's going on, then it means when you hear news stories, you read things in the paper, you're more likely to probably engage with them because it doesn't go over your head. You're not thinking, oh, I haven't a clue what that's about.
Yeah.
You know, you can actually see, you understand what's going on and you can see your place in it as well.
Yeah. And who are you appealing to? Teachers, obviously, but where, like in the county, are they going to be coming from beyond, or who are you actually appealing to?
To be honest, the course, like the course is running in Waterville. We're really excited to run it in Waterville this year, actually. It's the first year. I have to give a shout out actually to SPA National School to say thank you for, they actually hosted this course for the last couple of years, but we've moved down to Waterville this year, closer to Anna, closer to Sea Synergy and the beautiful beaches down there. And this course is for teachers. It's for primary school teachers. They can, of course, be from the county. They can be local teachers. There's a few places remaining on the course. But I think there are some teachers that are travelling to Kerry and are staying in Waterville from the week, from outside the area. We won't actually know where the teachers are coming from until we meet them on the very first day. Very exciting. But we also have courses in Waterford. So we have a course through Waterford Support Centre that can be booked through them. That course runs in Tremor and Annstown. We have another course up in Galway. We have another course in West Cork, which is going ahead in Clonakilty. And then we actually have an online course as well, would you believe it, with Mayo Education Sports Centre. And any teacher from anywhere in the country could do the online course if they wanted to, from their own kitchen. They don't even have to leave their house.
Yeah, because it is during the summer holidays. So I could imagine that there's a kind of a double incentive that if you were coming on your holidays to Waterville, for instance, for the few days as well, you kind of get the best of both worlds. But I suppose that's important. I mean, it is during the holidays. So why do you think it is so important that teachers should attend something like this?
I think it's a really up-and-coming topic, and I think it's something that, you know, I suppose, like, I understand that, like, classrooms are really, really busy places, and, you know, the basics of English, Irish and maths, they're really important, and teachers have to focus a lot of their time on some of those things. But I suppose during the summer, it's a great opportunity to just get a chance to maybe experience something different, you know, something that little bit unique, getting out, getting down onto the shore, getting hands-on, looking at place-based learning, looking at hands-on learning, having a chance also to just explore topics with your peers. So this course is very, you know, it's very interactive. It's not sitting and listening to PowerPoints. It's not just writing out sheets of paper and doing worksheets. This is hands-on. This is, we want teachers to feedback and to tell us, you know, what they're interested in as well. So we want lots of lively discussion and chat. And, you know, we're not afraid to talk about hard topics as well. You know, what is threatening our marine environment? How do maybe we look at the issue of fisheries or the use of marine spaces when you think of people's livelihoods and coastal communities alongside a future and a sustainable ocean? You know, so the week is just a brilliant opportunity for that. Like, it's just a great place for teachers to be able to come, explore these new environments, and also interact with their peers and have these discussions alongside, of course, the explorer's tutor, who's going to provide a bit of guidance along the way.
Yeah, and many of our schools around this county, because we're a coastal county, are, you know, so close to the coast as well. You know, some schools are actually looking out at it, you know, so it's all around us. And again, like, we've done, we did a documentary called Plastic Generation about the damages, you know, plastics are doing to our marine life. And then in turn to actually us, if we want to think about it in a selfish point of view, you know, what can be passed through the food chain? It's staggering, and the damage that's been done out there.
Yeah, and definitely when we think of the general public, the topic of the ocean and how it links to human health or human well-being is one that is quite a good trigger for engagement, because, as you said, at the end of the day, we're all human. And really, you know, when you think about making, like, trying to maybe make a change, like even within my own household, if I have to think about if I'm going to try and do something more sustainably, if there's a big barrier to it, it might make, you know, take a big commitment on my part, and my health would be a big reason why I might want to make a change. So, yeah, looking at the health of our natural spaces, definitely, yeah, getting out onto the shore. And that's one of the things we'll do. Like, we look at doing a beach clean on the shore. We look at where marine litter comes from, and we link that back then to changes that can be made on a daily basis, a weekly basis, a yearly basis, in our own personal lives, in our classrooms, in our schools, in our communities. So we try to look at a range of different options. And the teachers, again, might be able to bring back to a school, even for discussion with students.
Yeah, it's excellent. Once again, if people want to get involved, where do they go, and remind them when and where it's on?
Yes, so if teachers would like to book the course in Waterville in Kerry, please head on to the Tralee Education Support Centre website, and you'll see the course there, Exploring the Seashore Using Creative Cross-Curricular Learning and Skills Development. You can also check out the Explorers website at explorers.ie if you're looking for more information about the programme. If you're a school that would like to get involved in the programme next year, you'll see there's an inquiries button at the top of the page. Click that and you'll get straight to me. And there's loads of content on that. There's more information about the courses around the country, the online course, and all the materials as well. So all the materials that are freely available to download and use. Even if it's at home during the summer, you're looking for some material to use with the kids on a wet day, you'd like to show them a video about the seashore and get them colouring in some nice sheets, or working on a workbook about squid or sharks or deep sea species, there's loads of content on the website, Joe, so people will be, they'll be overrun by marine material if they head on to it.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Noreen Bourke, thanks a million for coming on and telling us all about it, and best of luck with it.
Thank you very much, Joe. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Dr. Noreen Bourke there. We'll take a break. We'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, Thursday is the longest day of the year, the summer solstice. Would you believe that? Can you believe it? It's the longest day of the year this Thursday. Well, in the Northern Hemisphere, the June solstice, aka the summer solstice, occurs when the sun travels along its northernmost path in the sky. This marks the astronomical start of summer in the northern half of the globe. In the Southern Hemisphere, then, it's the opposite. The June solstice marks the astronomical start of the winter, when the sun is at its lowest point in the sky. Now, the June solstice occurs on Thursday, June 20th, 2024 at 4:51 p.m. This solstice marks the official beginning of the summer, occurring when Earth arrives at the point in its orbit where the North Pole is at its maximum tilt. And for those that want to know, it's about 23.5 degrees towards the sun, resulting in the longest day and the shortest night of the calendar year. And then, like I said, in the southern hemisphere, then it's the opposite. So it's when the sun reaches its highest and northernmost points in the sky, it marks the start of summer in the northern part of the globe. The term solstice comes from the Latin words sol, or sun, and sestere, to stand still. And that's due to the Earth's tilted axis. The sun doesn't rise and set at the same locations on the horizon each morning and evening. Its rise and set positions move northward or southward in the sky as Earth travels around the sun through the year. Also, the sun's track in the sky becomes higher or lower throughout the year. Now, the sun solstice is significant because the sun reaches its northernmost point in the sky at this time, at which point the sun's path does not change for a brief period of time. And I suppose the other thing to remember is that the solstice doesn't always occur on the same day. The timing of the June solstice is not based on a specific calendar date or time. It all depends on when the sun reaches its northernmost point from the celestial equator. Therefore, the solstice won't always occur on the same day. Currently, it shifts between June 20th, 21st and 22nd. Now, in Irish terms, it has significant historical and mystical significance in Ireland, and you know, when it comes to its ancient sites. One of the eight sacred days in Ireland's Celtic tradition is the summer solstice, falling this year on June 20th, is associated with fertility, nature and new beginnings. The Hill of Tara is the ancient seat of the High Kings of Ireland, and for centuries was considered to be the island's most sacred place. Once believed to be the entrance to the other world, it is steeped in mythology. The Leofall, or Stone of Destiny, which was used to choose the king, still stands there. Now, for millennia, crowds have gathered on the Hill of Tara to witness the dawn of the solstice, usually around 4 a.m, many believing that there is a special energy there and a connection with the past. As the sun rises, it is greeted with informal music and storytelling performances. A number of Irish Neolithical tombs appear to have celestial alignments that are evident at the summer and winter solstices. And I suppose the most famous is Newgrange, one of Ireland's most important archaeological sites, which is part of Brú na Boina, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, over 5,000 years old. Newgrange predates the Great Pyramids of Giza in Egypt and Stonehenge in Great Britain. Famous for the illumination of the tomb at dawn on the winter solstice, Newgrange is now thought to have archaeo-astronomical significance at sunset on the summer solstice. And a visit to the tomb is only possible on a guided tour, but from a distance you can watch the setting sun skimming the edge of the tomb on the summer solstice. So it is taking place this Thursday, and you know what I said, I thought I better mention it. Now, that's all we have time for on the programme. I hope you enjoyed it this morning. I hope you have a great weekend. Remember, next month, first Saturday of the month, we have our photography stop with Dominic Walsh. The theme is lasting impressions. A photo that has made a lasting impression on you. A photo of something or a place that has left a lasting impression on you. The overall theme is lasting impressions. You can email them to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. And this Saturday coming, on the Saturday supplement, you can check in with me and see how I'm getting on my Irish journey to become fluent in 1 year. I aim to become fluent, or LIFA, Patrick's Day next year. So hopefully I will have achieved that goal, Lacoon of Day. Now, I hope you enjoyed the programme. My thanks to Abigail Bernard, who was on sound. Francis is on the way, so keep it here on Radio Kerry. And I'll join you again next Saturday from 9 a.m. Until then, look after yourself and take care.